Once at night, while it was raining, a tiger entered the land of the cowshed. Upon seeing the tiger, all the cows who were lying down got up in fear and scattered here and there on the land. Egam jagraha balavam sa sukrusa bayatura tasyastukam ditam srutva prisadrona sasaraha katkamadaya tarasa pralina dukanenisi ajanan achinat babru shira sadula sankhya. When the very strong tiger seized the cow screamed in distress and fear. And Prasadra, hearing the screaming, immediately followed the sound. He took up his sword, but because the stars were covered by clouds, he mistook the cow for the tiger, and mistakenly cut off the cow's head with great force. Vyagro pivrikna salvano nistrim sagrahatastata nichakrama prisam vito raktam patisamuchitan. Because the tiger's ear had been cut by the edge of the sword, the tiger was very afraid, and it fled from that place while bleeding on the street. Manyamana hatam vyagram prasidra paraviraha adraktit swahatim babrum yustayam nisidukita. In the morning, when Prasida, who was quite able to subdue his enemy, saw that he had killed the cow, although at night he thought he had killed the tiger, he was very unhappy. Tam sasapa kularcharya kritagasam akamataha nakshatrabandhu sudrasvam karmana bhavitamanu muna. Although Prasadra had committed the sin unknowingly, his family Prishth Vasistha cursed him, saying, in your next life you shall not be able to become a kshatriya. Instead, you shall take birth as a sudra because of killing the cow. Purport. It appears that Vasistha was not free from tamoguna, the mode of ignorance. As the family priest or spiritual master of Prasadra, Vasistha should have taken Prasadra's offense very lightly. But instead, Vasistha cursed him to become a sudra. It is the duty of a family priest not to curse a disciple, but to give him relief through the performance of some sort of atonement. Vasistha, however, did just the opposite. Devasila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that he was durmati. In other words, his intelligence was not very good. So here's a description of a tragedy, a very unfortunate incident. Prasadra was a kshatriya, a man dedicated to principles of dharma, a man dedicated to uphold religion. But then somehow or other, he was not very wealthy, because a kshatriya by nature is meant to rule. To rule either over a kingdom, or when a kshatriya was not wealthy, then to rule over a village. But obviously, even if there was a kshatriya who was the protector of a village, he would have a few sons. So what would all these sons do? So if there was no village, then sometimes the kshatriya would take up the position of protecting the cows. Not in the way that the Vaishyas are doing by milking the cows, but by standing there at night with a sword and just guarding from thieves or wild animals and so on. So that was obviously the situation with Prasadra. And he stood there at night, but somehow or other, due to the bad weather and an unclear vision, he made this mistake, that he mistook the cow to be the tiger, and he cut off the head of the cow. He, of course, was extremely unhappy about it. But as it is said, it was a sin. It was not that he was absolved from the reaction of such an activity. there was a reaction that he had to go through. It was a sin, and he committed it unknowingly, and therefore the reaction was not very strong, but there was a sense of reaction. Yeah, because the cows are essential. They are harmless. They are dear to Krishna. It is said the cow, the body of the cow, is the residence of all the demigods, of 33 million demigods. They all reside within the body of the cow. And simply, Prabhupada explains, everything coming from the cow is auspicious. Just like not only the milk, but the urine of the cow is also auspicious. I was years ago visiting Tirupati, and the temple president gave me a tour of the temple, and we come to the Goshala, and this one cow begins to pass urine. He immediately put his hand under the cow and drank it. And I sort of like a little shocked, you know, from the West. Right? Looked at it like, whoa, you know. And then he said, yes, my grandmother taught me like this. I said, my grandmother didn't teach me that. He said, well, this is very good, he says. Yes, whenever I see a cow pass urine, I have to drink. Okay. But that is a part of India which is still deeply rooted in Vedic customs and practices. And that was kind of impressive. Yes, the urine of the cow is taken as medicine, as medicinal properties. When the liver is weak, and then the urine of the cow is purifying the liver. And so many medicines are made from cow urine or cow dung and other substances. So in that way, there is nothing inauspicious coming out of the cow. Everything, every aspect of the cow is positive. Therefore, one must always appreciate the cow. So somehow or other, the cow had been killed, and even unknowingly. It is said, knowingly or unknowingly, fire burns. So knowingly or unknowingly, karmic reactions are there. But for sins committed unknowingly, the karmic reaction is minimal compared to sins committed knowingly. Prisadra committed the sin unknowingly, unintentionally, so it was not appropriate that Vasistha cursed him on top of that. It was enough that he just had to go through some reaction, and possibly Vasistha could have instructed him to perform austerities or something to that effect. Just to send out a signal to the world that, you know, the killing of a cow is never acceptable, and that even when killed in accident, that one takes on some austerity for purification. That he could have been done, just as we see when Krishna killed Aristasura. Then the gopis said that, oh, now you have killed a bull. Now we cannot associate with you. You are contaminated. You will have to go. You will have to go and visit all the holy places for purification. Krishna, of course, did that. But he called all the holy waters to come in his, and he made a hole in the ground, a pond appeared, and Krishna took his bath in all these holy waters that appeared there. Then Krishna said to the gopis, so I fulfilled your desire, but actually you are the ones who are sinful, because he was not a cow. He was a demon, and you have protected a demon, and for that, and now therefore you are contaminated. Now you will have to pay the law. So in this way we see the story of Radha Kund. Within that story we can get a little indication that the gopis, who were aware of Vedic standards, knew very well that anyone who somehow or other kills a cow or a bull is contaminated. So we can understand Prisadra was contaminated, and Vasistha could have given him some injunction for purification, but a curse was not appropriate, because after all, it was unintentional. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada follows Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, who uses the word durmati. Mati is referring to the state of mind or intelligence, and dur means difficult. So not working very well. Durmati. The intelligence was not functioning very well. Which meant not just mundane intelligence, but the definition of intelligence that is applied here is the definition of the Vedic scriptures, which means that one acts according to the absolute truth. Just as it is said, Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, Krishna will give intelligence. Not that one is born with a certain intelligence and that's basically it. You have your IQ and it's fixed. Too bad, you know. The definition of intelligence is that one understands what one's duty is, and that subsequently one acts upon that duty, and then understanding that the duty is to concern Krishna, dhammam to succeed bhagavat panitam. So, in this way, standards are established, and an intelligent person will always act according to such duty. So the spiritual master is, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta sometimes signed his letter, and Prabhupada took that and continued to always sign his letters with these three words, your ever well-wisher. And that is the position of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is meant to be the ever well-wisher, and that's quite a position, because it sounds nice on paper, you know, it sounds really nice, now you're accepting this person as your disciple and benevolently in the role of a spiritual master, you'll be his ever well-wisher. But what if he becomes a murderer? What if he becomes a brutal serial killer? Yeah, some horrible case, you know. Then what you gonna do? Still the well-wisher. He's committed a heinous crime, something disgusting. Yeah. And still you are his well-wisher. But that's what it means, to be an ever well-wisher. There's nothing that a disciple can do that can really take away this merciful mood. That's what it means, your ever well-wisher. So that's indeed quite a thing to say, your ever well-wisher. It can really turn for... So spiritual masters may expect that, that sometimes their disciples become involved in very undesirable activities. So Vasistha should not have come down from the transcendental platform. It is said, it appears that Vasistha was not free from tamoguna. Tamoguna in the sense of forgetfulness. There were times that he forgot the transcendental position. It is said that Guru, the the translation of the word guru is heavy. Not heavy because he is such a heavy guy. Not in that way heavy. Sometimes he may be like that. He is heavy because you cannot move him from the lotus feet of Krishna. That's why he's heavy. Nothing can move him from that position. So that is how it should be. And if he is moved from that position, then he is influenced by the modes of material nature, by ignorance. Because when one is influenced by the three modes of material nature, it means that one is influenced by ignorance. Even one who is in the influence of goodness, right? One who is in the mode of goodness, is covered by ignorance. They're all just different degrees of ignorance. Only in the transcendental position is one in full knowledge. Satsidanand. And so even a Brahmana is to some degree covered by ignorance. And then his business is cultivating knowledge. So he's dedicated to cultivating knowledge and to dissolving ignorance. Tamasima Jyotir Gama. He is ready to renounce ignorance and to go towards the light. This means towards knowledge. Yes, that is his business. That is Brahmana. The Kshatriyas may sometimes, they are even more covered by some ignorance. So Sudras, just totally covered by ignorance. So we see that actually, as long as one is under the three modes, they're all different degrees of forgetfulness of the Supreme Lord, of being ignorant of the Absolute Truth. So even the mode of goodness is therefore at fault. It is faulty. It is there's something lacking. It is incomplete. Incomplete understanding of reality, of the truth. It is simply the state where one is learning about the Absolute Truth. Vasistha was meant to be on the transcendental platform, on the pure devotional platform, as a spiritual master. So there was some fault. And still, Vasistha, as a spiritual master, is worshipped and respected, even although there may be a trace of such imperfection in him. Okay? He's not condemned and therefore stripped of the office, you know, so to speak. Like sometimes we say that there are people who are looking at a guru with a microscope to see if they can find a possible flaw, anything, right? Anything that even hints of an imperfection, and as soon as they find it, aha, he is not qualified, I knew it all along. Right. So we could say that now here with Vasistha, aha, you know, aha, Vasistha is not qualified, aha, you know, the back to Prabhupada magazine would have a field day, put a big cover article about Vasistha and like, you know, and how he has faults. Yes. But we see that Vasistha is not rejected to act as a guru. It's overlooked. It's minimal because actually Vasistha was ordinarily giving proper instructions. So it's to be overlooked. Even in Vasistha, it may be there, and you can say that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is pointing it out, but at the same time, we shouldn't make too much of it. We should not say, oh, Vasistha, therefore, you know, whenever from now on the name Vasistha comes up, yeah, we know Vasistha. Vasistha is influenced by Tamaguna. It says in Prabhupada's purports. Yes. No, it does. Right? But if we take this statement out of Prabhupada's purport and we just carve it in stone and magnify it, right, and give it and overemphasize it, then we are misrepresenting the actual understanding. So this is interesting, that this is possible, that one can take from a bona fide source, like Prabhupada's books, one can take statements, and then one presents them out of context, and one changes the emphasis of the statement, and suddenly the meaning changes, the importance changes. And suddenly, I could say, for example, well, the sister was not free from tamoguna, the mode of ignorance. That's one way of looking at it. Vasistha was influenced by tamaguna. By tamaguna he was influenced. Vasistha totally influenced by tamaguna. And it's like, you can see how emphasis can change the meaning. Therefore, in presenting arguments based on the scripture, one must be very careful to present the quotes that we take from the scripture in the context of the entire message. We must be careful when we just take a quote from here and there and make a case. We should make sure that we are looking at, like, yeah, but what was Prabhupada's general mood on this topic? And what was the general mood of the acharyas on this topic? And was it sort of consistent? And if we don't have so much knowledge, then we should also be a little careful to become so absolute, to make sweeping absolute statements. Then we should not do so, because we may be mistaken or be so opinionated. Therefore, we see that, you see in discussions with Vaishnavas, you see that advanced Vaishnavas often present their point of view in a humble way by saying that, well, in my understanding, it is like this and this and this. It is like this and this because I've read it in three different scriptures, and therefore it's absolutely sure and the absolute truth, and therefore I am totally right. That's not Brahminical. Because Brahminical, the mode of goodness, means that we have this mood of humility and thinking that I'm not so qualified, I'm not so learned. There's so much knowledge in the Vedic literature. I may know two or three slokas, and I may know something, but then there's so much more to know that I'm not claiming that I know the all in all about everything. Yes. So that is an appropriate attitude, because then one can also hear. One can hear, and then one can in a learned circle and learned discussion, one can hear, and instead of entering into debate, one can learn in such discussion. So that is right. That is right. Like, we are having Bhagavatam lectures, the speakers are nice. They're nice, sincere devotees, but they are just among us. You know what I mean? It's like today it's one, tomorrow it's another, So one devotee said, "I'm not going to Bhagavatam class anymore." No. So why not? So because the speakers are not qualified. They're not qualified. So I stay in my room and I just listen to lectures of Prabhupada. Because the speakers are not qualified, because they are not completely transcendental. And sometimes the mode of ignorance slips in. And, I don't want to become contaminated by such lectures. I will only hear Prabhupada's lectures. Well, what about such an idea? Now that we're bringing it up, what if the speaker of the Bhagavatam, in all sincerity, gets it wrong, then are we getting contaminated? No, it is actually that in these discussions amongst the devotees, where we hear the point all from different angles, we all read the same thing, but one understands a little different than another, and then you hear it from another person, hey, I never thought of it in that way, really. Whereas we read it again and again, the same thing, and we always understand it in the same way. But then one day we hear it from another person and we understand it in another way. So in this way, in such discussions amongst the Vaishnavas, we are journeying the absolute truth, and gradually an understanding crystallizes. We see that Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, they were forced by the Nawab Hussain Shah to become part of his government. The Nawab was very convincing. The Nawab basically said that I will kill the entire Brahmin community and all the cows in Bengal if you don't take this service. So then, okay, so that did it, you know. All right then, thank you for the offer. And then they took up the government service. And they at that point they began to live a double life, because in the court of the king they had to live as Muslims and were dressed in aristocratic Muslim dress and like aristocracy in Bengal in that time. They were carried around in palanquins, and they had their own village, Ramakeli, a little bit away from Goda, which was the place where the palace of the Nawab was. And then in that village, they lived their private life. And in their private life, they had made a Gupta Vrindavan. They had made several holy places. Like they had a Radhakund and a Shyamakund. They had a Lalita and a Vishakakund there. They made the village was on the bank of the Ganges, and they made like different cottages, like small, nice cottages. And then they invited brahmanas from all over India to come and reside in these cottages. This is what I'm explaining is all from the Bhakti Ratnakara, actually. And so then they were meeting there with these various scholars, and they invited famous scholars, and they would all come. And so many scholars assembled there that it was just people wanted to go. You know, brahmanas wanted to go and stay there and to be in such an association, in such an assembly. So many amazing Vaishnavas were there just because they built many nice cottages where they could stay. And then all the brahmanas stayed there. Then each day they had amazing discussions. And the discussion was especially centering around the Bhagavatam. You see, in the Bhakti Ratnakara, there is an earlier mention that when Sanatana Goswami was still young, that he had a dream, and that in the dream, one brahmana came, and that the brahmana presented him with a copy of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he was very happy, a real manuscript of Bhagavatam. You know? So in his dream, he was over the moon, as they say, completely happy. Then he woke up, it was just a dream. Oh, okay. Because to have a Bhagavatam was something extraordinary that no one had, because Bhagavatam, you know, the manuscripts in those days were handwritten, and obviously 18,000 verses. You know, so you had to find some brahmana who would take up this work of hand copying the Bhagavatam. And 18,000 verses, how long is that going to take? You know, to hand copy 18,000 verses, long time. So obviously most brahmanas would take on a smaller text. You know what I mean? Like most would not. do a handwritten copy of the Bhagavatam, better than the Bhagavad Gita, right? That's easy, 700 verses or 18,000. Yeah. So, like that, we understand that there were not so many copies of Bhagavatam around. No. And Sanatana Goswami was disappointed that it was only a dream. But later that day, that very same Brahmana came and presented him with the Bhagavatam. So then it was even more special, and because he had had a dream about it in the night. So then it was kind of like arranged, you know, not just this, a Brahmana gave me this Bhagavatam, but I got the Bhagavatam by divine arrangement. So Sanatana Goswami then writes in his Krishna Lila Stava that the Bhagavatam became his constant companion. So this is interesting. It was not a light statement, you know, like the Bhagavatam became his constant companion. Basically, he lived with the Bhagavatam. He was always reading the Bhagavatam, daily reading the Bhagavatam. And of course, constant companion doesn't mean that he was constantly reading the Bhagavatam, but it meant that his mind was absorbed in the Bhagavatam and that he was thinking through the Bhagavatam about the world. And in this way, he was seeing it. So we can understand that, therefore, the discussions that were taking place in Ramakeli were centering around the Bhagavatam. That was the focus of Sanatana Goswami. And we see that it was also the focus of Rupa Goswami, because we see that the main evidence that is given by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is Bhagavatam. So they were discussing the Bhagavatam in the assembly of the most learned sages of their time. And in these discussions, their understanding of the Bhagavatam became more and more refined. So this is the spirit of how we are also discussing Bhagavatam and hearing Bhagavatam. And in the discussion of various Vaishnavas, we are refining our understanding. So the point is that Vasistha comes up as a spiritual master throughout the Vedic literatures. Right? Vasistha is not, there is no reference that Vasistha is disqualified to act as a spiritual master. But here we see that there is some influence of Tamaguna detected and confirmed by Prabhupada and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Fine, we accept that. But with it, we also see that a spiritual master is rare. A spiritual master is precious. A spiritual master is not often found in the world. It's not like a very common thing, and it's not like that one treats them like unimportant, you know. And one must look at their credits, right? Not at the discredits. One must look at the credits. In the Vedic culture, a person is especially judged by his credits. The credits weigh more than the discredits. Of course, if there's a serious offense, that can spoil everything. But if Prisadra would have purposely killed the cow, then he would have been cast out. Right? He would have just been cast out of the community right there and then. Right? That would have been another thing. Anyway, in this way we are getting some insights in principles of Varna Ashram and in principles of Guru Tattva. And we can see that maybe in the modern world, at least some people, their mood is too rigid. Too rigid in the way they deal with advanced Vaishnavas. They are not. Amongst Vaishnavas, we should we should expect that the basic purity is there. And we are not tolerating deviation from the basic standards of purity. But when those standards of purity, basic purity is there, then we are inclined to become adosha-darshi, or to not see any fault in anyone. Even when it's there, we don't see it. In other words, then the spirit is there to give credit, to look at the credits. So this is our mantra. We look at devotees, we look at the credits of the devotees. Oh, so nice, so nice. This devotee is doing so many nice things. But when a devotee is giving up the basic four principles, then of course we say, oh, that's not nice. Yeah, if he breaks the principles, that's not nice. But still we consider all his credits. We will not then hang him on the highest tree or and as they do in America, tar and feathers and out. No tar and feathers. We will still respect him. Apichet sudra chayo bhajate mamananya bhak saduri visamantavya samyapya vasitai saha. He is still saintly. He is still saintly. God is there. And his credits are more important. More important. So like this, we see the spirit amongst the Vaishnavas, adosha-darshi, inclined to not see any faults, to only see the credits. Nice community. Of course, we are not like that, you know. We are not like that. Because we didn't grow up like that. We grew up different. We grew up also finding faults, and we also grew up like being critical, suspicious. We have also fault finding is also connected to suspicion and fear. Suspicion is connected to fear. No trust. We don't trust. Who can you trust? Can I trust him? I don't know. 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 Can I trust them? I don't know. Like this, no trust. So in Kali Yuga, it is hard to trust. Because who can you trust? As a result of trust, of lack of trust, you can see how fear comes in and how one becomes critical. If you're not critical, you're naive. If you believe anybody, you're naive, right? Anybody comes and says, yes, yes, yes. You know. We just, you know, all my money was just stolen. What do I do now? Just need money for the ticket to go home. Wherever they go, their money was always stolen, and they always need money for the ticket to go home. How can you trust? So it's hard in this age to trust. So we need a community life which is based on principles of trust. And trust begins not with trusting. Trust begins when we begin to act in a trustworthy way. So we must first become trustworthy, and then trust will develop. You cannot just say, you must trust. Yeah, 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 sure. I mean, I'm not trusting, yeah, because I've been hurt too many times. Yeah. But if the community is trustworthy, then trust will develop. But to be trustworthy means that every Vaishnava is to be taken as precious. Every Vaishnava is to be taken as important. Everyone who has done service for Krishna is a person who is to be given value and respect, and who must be dealt with care and consideration. And that's not easy. Not easy. That doesn't mean that if someone is not able to maintain certain standards, that everyone can is fit to live in the community. Some people are better off in a private situation. Yes, all these things are complicated. But anyway, this spirit that the Vaishnavas are precious, and that we look at their credits, that is the basis. But we must be worthy. Cannot just say, yes, I'm a Vaishnava, I'm precious. No. We say, no, I am fallen, I'm trying to become a Vaishnava. I'm not really a Vaishnava, I'm just trying to become a Vaishnava. But you are all Vaishnavas, you are all precious. I'm just trying to become. In this way, we can sincerely try. And in that way, I feel that our movement needs to do a lot of work in developing their community life to a higher standard. That's where we need to do work. Yeah. We cannot just have a great philosophy. We have to change. We can not only externally live by principles, but we actually have to develop very noble standards of interaction. All right. Maybe some comments, some questions.
You mentioned that Prabhupada was always writing your ever-well-wisher. So was it a thing that he found somewhere? Or did, was
yeah, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He took it from his spiritual master. I don't know where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta got it. That I can't say. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, I don't know a Sanskrit equivalent for it, any root way in the Vedic literature. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta coined the phrase, the English one.
Who is Krishna more fond of? Is it cows or is it Brahmins? And is there any difference in different realms of spiritual and material worlds?
Well, we know that the verse Namo Brahmani Devaya Go Brahmani Taicha Jagati Tai Krishnaya Go. That first the cows are mentioned, and then the Brahmanas. So Krishna is especially. That doesn't mean that necessarily Krishna is more fond of the cows than the Brahmanas, but it means that he gives at least special attention to put the cows in priority. The state of Krishna's heart, how can we understand? You know, so when you say fond of, you're talking about the state of Krishna's heart. How can we understand the great state of Krishna's heart? Right. So that's not completely clear, but Namo Brahmani Devaya Go Brahmani Hitaya Cha. He gives, first of all, he mentions the cows. So maybe because they even need it more. Both the cows and the Brahmanas need protection, but maybe the cows need it even more. So he mentions them first. So the cows I mentioned is so auspicious. You know, like in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, there is a verse which says, May the cows be in front of me, may the cows be on the side of me, may the cows be behind me, may I always be in the midst of the cows. So one can understand how important are the cows. And so just if we are in the midst of the cows and properly taking care of the cows, everything falls into place. But that doesn't mean that the cow can lead society. It's the Brahmanas who have to lead society. I mean, obviously, and you know, who's more important, a Brahmana or a cow? In a way, a Brahmana, right? Because without a Brahmana, how are we going to know what to do? Right? And so if you start to say, who, mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the most of all? Then, you know, you are in a, you're making an artificial intellectual separation. Because we have all, we have Brahmanas and we have cows. And we need to wholeheartedly dedicate ourselves to the Brahmanas and wholeheartedly to the cows. And completely, with every fiber of our existence. That's what it means. Therefore the question is theoretical and has nothing to do with our practical duties, which are we equally respect the Brahmanas and the cows. Boom.
A question about accidental sin. In the very beginning, we were talking about, and that he, although he did it accidentally, he still has to suffer the consequences. So, in the life of a devotee, in the course of his service, if he accidentally commits something wrong, does he have to suffer the consequences, or should he? Because devotee accepts the service, so he's putting himself in a situation to offend or to.
Okay. When we speak about the situation of Prisadra, his story is a matter of karma. So he is under the influence of karma. He's not engaging in devotional service. He is protecting the cow, but he was not just doing it only as pure devotional service to Krishna. He did it as a pious duty. Which is very good. I mean, and from that, you know, I mean, he gets so much pious credit. But because he accidentally committed a mistake, there was karmic reaction. So what happens to a devotee now? A devotee is accepted by Krishna and is under the protection of Krishna. So it is when the devotee is sincerely engaging in service and makes a mistake in the course of service, right? You know, we have these accidents where we drive over animals. Yeah, I mean, I was driving in Australia, there were all these rabbits running under the car, not one or two, many. Oh, it's just too much, you know. You have so many rabbits and you try to avoid them, and on a country road, and come running out of the sight, and then poof, okay. And then you hear the devotees think, well, you know, they are blessed, you know, they are blessed. They got knocked over by the Sankirtan mission, you know, Sankirtan, and they got the mercy, you know, they got the mercy. So, what about this, you know? Is that a little... it's a fact that first of all, the devotee is not getting a reaction when he's sincerely engaging in service of Krishna, even if such things happen. Even if an apparent mistake happens, Krishna will save him from the reaction. Krishna will take away the reaction. Yeah. He may, it's said, for accidental, this is Madhurya Kadambini, for accidental mistakes made in devotional service, a devotee may get reactions. But these reactions will not manifest in the form of anarthas in the heart. These reactions, they come only, they come in the form of some suffering, but it will not scar his heart or cover his consciousness. You know, sort of like karmic reactions are actually going in the heart and changing the consciousness. So it's kind of, so this is called seva. Such offenses are seva aparat, and then the reactions to seva aparat, yeah, are like just external reactions that are not affecting the heart. But if it's consciously committed, then it becomes nam aparat and it affects the heart. Yeah. So like this, accidental mistakes are not taken serious. But as soon as we take it as a license, oh, therefore I don't have to be strict, you know, it doesn't matter so much, you know, I can, you know, I mean, in the name of Sankirtan, you know, I eat anything, you know, from anywhere, and, you know, I mean, it's, but Prabhu, the E numbers in these cookies are not vegetarian. I don't care, you know what I mean, in the Sankirtan mission. No. Now one gets, then, now it becomes conscious offense. There's reaction, then no protection. So, like that, there is a fine line, also for the devotee, but accidental. We get away with it. As far as those rabbits, yeah, yes, any creature that gets killed by, even accidentally by a devotee, that gets some blessings like that. But these things are very sensitive, you know. Like I was in the village of the Dalai Lama in the Himalayas, and I saw a whole line of Buddhist monks standing in front of a butcher shop, waiting for their turn to buy their, you know, their piece of meat. And so I asked one of them, but how is it that all these monks are standing here when the philosophy of the Buddha is ahimsa, is non-violence? How come you're eating meat? How is this possible? It's like incomprehensible to me. Isn't this going directly against the teachings of the Buddha? They say, no, when the monks are eating meat, then they're very merciful, because that animal gets liberation. So, yeah, you know, this kind of whitewash philosophies are going around, so we must be very careful that we don't start to get a whitewash philosophy like that, and to whitewash all our wrong activities. We must avoid them. We must avoid killing to every extent, but we cannot, right? Accidentally, it still happens. But therefore Bhagavatam is very clear. We must avoid stepping on the ants, but still we do. Sometimes. So, such an ant that we accidentally stepped on is certainly getting a better situation. Yeah. He gets a better situation. But the ways of karma are complicated, undoubtedly. One cannot always see the destiny, because ultimately karmana daivane trena jantu deupapatite, that the living being is placed within his next body according to his karma and according to daivanetrena, according to the divine supervision of the Lord. So the element of the Lord, that factor, we cannot predict, we cannot oversee. Right? Therefore you cannot just make sweeping statements about karma, what the destiny will be. So unless you are a Mahabhagavat, then, you know, like Prabhupada, he could, of course, say, make very absolute statements on it. Fine. But we cannot. Done. Thank you very much. No comments. Okay. did you have in mind? What did you have in mind?
You mentioned this much, should be Adosha Darshi, not inclined to see voice, but on the other hand, one should not give up one's sense of one's ability of to discriminate, just to be friendly. But you answered already.
Mm-hmm. It's not easy to find the right balance there. Not easy. And there's different moods among different Vaishnavas. Some are the strict ones, and some are the merciful ones. Just as there are different moods amongst parents, you know, sometimes mom is really heavy and dad is soft, and you know, or the other way around. So different Vaishnavas may respond differently. Chota Haridas was rejected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but all the other Vaishnavas tried to still give him the mercy. Krishna didn't want to know Duryodhana, and Balaram was kind to him. So it's like we see that it's also personal, the way it's where the exact point of discrimination lies. You know, like, to what extent should we be friendly, to what extent should we be strict about a standard. It's personal. We need some devotees who uphold the standards, and we need some devotees to take on the mood of Nityananda and to accept the most form. Now I can go on, I haven't, but I shouldn't, because it's too late.